Today on Maine Calling, ballot question two. Question two on the November ballot concerns situations in which someone is deemed significantly dangerous to themselves or others, situations in which those close to the person believe their weapons should be taken away. The measure would allow family and household members, not just law enforcement officers, to initiate the process. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will speak with leaders on both sides of this ballot measure. Maine currently has a yellow flag law in which a mental health professional must be consulted. How would this new law differ from that? Would it prevent more homicides and suicides, or would it spark dangerous situations and create a confusing new process? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by contributing listeners and support from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta, and by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering healthcare, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Our topic today is question two on the November ballot. It reads, do you want to allow courts to temporarily prohibit a person from having dangerous weapons if law enforcement, family, or household members show that that person poses a significant danger of causing physical injury to themselves or others? Today on the program, our guests represent those on both sides of this ballot measure. Joining me for the hour, David Trahan, who is Executive Director of the Sportsmen's Alliance of Maine. He opposes question two. And Ann Jordan, an attorney and former Commissioner of Public Safety for Maine, and she supports question two. We invite you to join the conversation. What questions do you have about the question on the ballot? You can send an email, a brief email, please, to talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Thank you both for joining us today. Ann, I'm going to start with you because you're part of the group that proposed this ballot measure. I'm wondering, Maine already has a way in which people can have, if they're deemed dangerous, weapons taken away from them. How would this explain, how would this measure that's question two change that?
This measure would allow family members to apply directly to the court for an order to have their dangerous weapons, including firearms, taken away. Current law does not give family members or household members that option. They have to involve law enforcement. As the former executive director of the Lewiston Commission to study the shootings, the commission found that the current law was burdensome, it was cumbersome, and it was unduly restrictive. This is simply another tool that will be made available to family members and to household members to get dangerous weapons out of the hands of persons who meet the strict standards set forth in the proposal.
All right. Well, David, someone might say, boy, somebody's family member knows them better than anybody else. Why shouldn't they be able to petition the court directly?
Well, sure. I'll start first by saying that the commission in which Ann Jordan served did not find fault with Maine's law. It said in its findings unanimously, I believe, unless they did something in secret, that Maine's yellow flag law could have and should have been used. So let's clear that up first thing. I would also like to add that I was also a former lawmaker for 12 years, and I served in the legislature when Ann Jordan was the commissioner. So I do have some history going back 25 years on making policy. Now let's get to family members petitioning the court. Ironically, across the nation where red flag laws have existed, they have failed to the degree where those states are now allowing police officers to petition the court. Massachusetts just was one of those states that was using their law about eight times a year. Under Maine's law, it's been used 1,121 times. And according to the state police and the Department of Public Safety that currently oppose this question two, family members are involved 99% of the time when issuing a yellow flag order. So families are already doing it, and they're not having to go to court. They're not having to be at risk or in danger. It's a misnomer out there that family members can't participate. They certainly can. The thing that's different is they can't directly petition the court. And we're going to get into that in a minute because it isn't just petitioning the court. It's creating identical statutes with completely different processes. And I think that's what the difference is here.
All right, well, a lot there. Three or four different points that I want to get into a little more deeply. The first is we're having this conversation almost exactly 2 years after the Lewiston shootings, and I think that a lot of people will be listening right now and thinking to themselves, if the yellow flag law were used differently, could it have prevented them? If this new law were passed, might it have prevented something like this? So I just want to sort of step back and acknowledge that this is very much on so many people's minds. And Anne, let me ask you, you said you were head of the commission. David pointed out that the commission did not take a stand on something like question two, but you believe that the yellow flag law was not sufficient, that Maine's existing law was not sufficient.
That's correct. And this is the problem. Maine's current law only allows law enforcement to initiate the process. Family members are stuck. They have no other option available to them if the police do not act. And I want to correct a statement that David made, because under the proposed law, family or household members can apply directly to the court, as can police officers. So that was a misstatement for David to say that police officers can't do a direct appointment. The difference is, under the current law, police officers have to respond. They have to take the person into protective custody. They have to get a mental health evaluation. Then that has to be endorsed by a judge. The proposed red flag law is an additional tool for family members to go directly to the courts. There were times that family members know better than police, times when family members know their loved one is already in treatment and that police involvement could or would make it worse at that initial stage. This is a second tool making things available. The commission stayed out of policy. They were charged with finding facts. And they found that the current law is cumbersome, unduly burdensome, and unduly restrictive as to who can apply to the courts. That's on page three of the report. It's there. The
Okay.
commission also
No,
found that
that's
they,
correct. That's correct.
let me finish, David, please. Stop interrupting. The commission also found that they could not guarantee that had the police agencies and/or the U.S. Army done what they should have done, whether this would have prevented the shooting, because no one can predict that. But this is another option available. And in states where there are red flag laws that would track what Maine's red flag law would be, it is showing that it works and it's saving lives. And that's what this is about.
So, David, my understanding is under the current yellow flag law, and I'm going to use the Robert Card example, that law enforcement officers would have been able to find him and take him into custody, would have had to be able to find him and take him into custody to initiate the process. And if they didn't, then there was not something else they could do. Is that correct?
No, that isn't correct. But I do want to go back to what Ann Jordan said about page three of the commission report.
First, tell me what's not right about what I just said.
Okay, well, I've got to correct her first because just
All
because
right.
you say something doesn't mean it's true. The commission had testimony from a police officer that made those statements. It was not the commission that made those statements. So let's correct that once and for all. That was on page three, and Ann, in the Channel 13 debate, you admitted to that. That was testimony to the commission. So now clarify your question again. What can the family do if they don't do a yellow flag? Well, I go back to what was an audio tape from police officers in the military talking about doing a possible yellow flag. If you remember right, it was reported in the press that they said that if they did a yellow flag, that it would have been like throwing gasoline on the fire. That was a mistake. There were a whole series of mistakes made all the way to New York. Now, if using their logic on the other side that Maine's law failed, in New York, Robert Card actually assaulted a fellow soldier, and that was where he ended up in a mental health facility. New York has a red flag law, and they were directed under executive order from the governor of New York to use their red flag law in those situations. They did not.
Well,
So if
that's
your argument is that they failed, the yellow flag failed, then red flag failed in New York. So.
the problem here is this. New York's red flag law. First of all, I want to correct a fact. He did not actually assault his fellow soldier. He tried to.
He
The
punched him in the
fellow
face.
soldier, that assault occurred in Maine, not in New York. Number two, New York's law and Maine's law at the time
Jesus.
limited the application of their orders to that state. Maine did not have the authority to enforce the New York state law. That's been since corrected, and that's good that it's been corrected. But the bottom line is there were multiple failures all along here. Multiple failures by law enforcement, multiple failures by the US Army, multiple failures to follow up. But the bottom line is Mr. Card's family, who was desperately seeking to get him help, couldn't do anything else. And that's what question two was about. Let's bring it back to what question two was really about. It's about having a second tool so that family members have an option to act if law enforcement doesn't.
Let
That's what
me,
this is about.
okay, I want to get really, again, back to the basics of what question two would do. And David, I want to ask you, what are you afraid would happen under question two that would be unacceptable?
Sure, I would love to. First of all, it's not my words, but it's the state police and the Department of Public Safety that said if this law passes, it will be dangerous. It'll be dangerous for the families, it'll be dangerous for the person being petitioned, and it'll be dangerous for police officers serving those petitions, those orders to take the firearms away. That's not my words. The governor has said so. So has Senator Carpenter, a Democrat, who was the judiciary chair.
Walk us
So
through that.
this
What
is,
do you mean it'll be
yes,
dangerous?
yeah, it'll be dangerous. Currently, how our yellow flag law works is if they get a call, the police, from a family that Uncle Joe has just tried to commit suicide or he's saying he's going to commit suicide, they come to the home and they observe that person. If there's probable cause to believe they're dangerous to themselves or others, then they're taken into protective custody. Problem solved. That person's in custody, the system, the actual danger has been contained. Under a red flag, it is completely different. That person in the family is supposed to go to court, and sometimes that can take a while to do that process. Go to court without that person's knowledge, petition the court to have their firearms taken away. Then the police, without the knowledge of the person being petitioned, is then directed to go get the guns. That officer then comes to the home with a person that has been deemed possibly dangerous without their knowledge and said, when they knock at the door, we're here to take your guns. Well, if that person is unstable, that officer then can have a very, very dangerous encounter with that individual in which they can be hurt, like in Maryland when one man was shot to death in his own home. Now, when that person goes to court, the person that has the red flag order also knows who it is. Now, this is a very, very important point that I think all your listeners need to know. The Sagahawk police reports indicated that the Card family wanted to remain anonymous and didn't want to be known as having taken his guns away. They were afraid of him. Look, I have the report in front of me, Anne. You want me to read it?
So,
Stop
David,
David.
I want Anne just to talk. I want to really keep it to the point of what the
This
changes
is the
will
danger,
be if
yes.
question two is
Yeah.
passed. And Anne, I
Okay.
want you to be able to respond to David's
Thank you. Can I finish
assertion
though?
that things would be more dangerous if people use question two.
Can I
No,
just
this
finish
a red
my
flag
answer?
law.
This is
No,
the
I'm going to
issue.
have Anne, because I
This
think
is
you're
the
right.
issue.
When a police officer currently gets a call to go to a request for assistance under the current yellow flag law, they are put in danger immediately. And if you read the 1,100 different responses, a large percentage of those are people who are talking about suicide by cop. The police officers know it's dangerous. The difference is under the red flag law, which is the second option available to law enforcement. Once the court issues an order finding the person dangerous, all the materials and information is provided to the law enforcement officer so he can serve the person. That includes the telephone number and the contact information for the family member who was concerned, and they can coordinate and plan with the family member the safest way to have him served and to remove the dangerous firearms. Sadly, police officers in Maine respond to these cases all the time, just like domestic violence cases, and they are put in danger. And they're the ones who know it. Now, I have spoken to other law enforcement who strongly disagree with the statement of the state police and strongly disagree with the governor. They want this extra tool so that they can have options to assist families and to get people the help they need and to get the dangerous weapons out of their hands. And the bottom line is, in this particular case, Sagata Hawk didn't go back. His sister, his brother-in-law, his brother, and his sister-in-law all went looking for help, and there was nothing else they could do because law enforcement didn't respond. So David's statement about they didn't want to be known, that was his son and his ex-wife in May. In September, the family members tried desperately to do it, and the response of Sagata Hawk was, "Well, if you think he needs a mental health evaluation, give us a call and we'll see what we can do to help you determine how to get the mental health evaluation." Another failure. And we want to avoid failures so we don't have any more families losing their loved ones and little children watching other people being shot and killed in their presence. That's the point of having the second option. It's not eliminating the yellow flag. It is not eliminating the yellow flag. And the people of Maine need to understand that. It's allowing the families to have another option to go to court.
David.
Yeah, well, I guess I want to get to the process that you use under red flag versus yellow flag. Our law was created by the legislature. The red flag law has been in front of the legislature multiple times and failed miserably. The people that were against yellow flag are the same people bringing forward this proposal for red flag. And that's the way the citizens' initiative process works. But this is an incredibly complicated bill. It doesn't, what the red flag law that's in front of us now does is it takes all of the due process that the legislature thought was important, the best legal minds in Maine thought were important, and it wipes them out. And it replaces it with a new structure based on lower due process standards that really are non-existent. And it wipes out that entire, I think, safety net for everyone involved.
So I think that due process is an important part of this conversation, but we do need to take a break. So I'll pick it up after we come back from the break. And also, we want to go to your questions. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. We are talking about question two on the Maine ballot. With me today, Ann Jordan, who is former Commissioner of Public Safety for Maine. She is in favor of the ballot measure. And David Trahan, Executive Director of the Sportsmen's Alliance of Maine, he opposes the ballot measure. We invite you to join the conversation. What do you want to know about the specifics of ballot question two? You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. I want to get back to this issue of due process. I know, David, you have spoken out about how you believe that this measure would take away due process. What do you mean about that, by that exactly? Because isn't going to the courts the very definition of due process?
Well, the standards and the processes you use in front of the court matter too. Under Maine's law, what the legislature did was it created this yellow flag law using our protective custody statute. In the protective custody statute, when an officer comes to the home, he has to have probable cause to believe you're dangerous. That's step one. Then the officer has to take that individual into custody, have them evaluated, which takes about 20 minutes and can be done in the back of a cruiser. The third thing it does is it when that person goes to court and finally has their firearms taken away, they use a due process standard called clear and convincing evidence. That's a high standard under criminal law. This red flag process wipes all that out and then has that person petition the court, and they use what's called the preponderance of evidence. That is a civil standard. In the words of the state police, it's the same standard they use when stopping you on the road for not using your windshield wipers in a rainstorm. Okay, that is the standard the court must use to take your rights away. And then when you try to get your rights back later, ironically, the red flag folks use clear and convincing evidence. So they create this incredibly low bar to take your rights away, and then an incredibly high bar to get them back. And I don't believe the courts are going to be okay with that.
Anne?
I disagree. First of all, the standards as set forth in the proposal in question two are based on the same standards as Maine's protection from abuse law. The Maine Supreme Court has upheld the process which question two tracks from the protection from abuse law in the case of In Re J. Additionally, it actually offers more due process because, under the current law, after an initial order is signed off on by the judge, there is 30 days before they have a hearing. Under the proposed changes, additions under the question two, it's 14 days to a hearing. Due process is the ability to go into court, have your day in court, present your evidence, and an experienced, well-trained judge makes a decision based on the evidence presented. And due process is completely provided for in this question. What we need to get back to here is we're not stripping away what's going on under Maine's current law. We're adding to it. The commission and the members of the public found there were big holes.
Okay, well,
Big holes in the process.
I do want to go to the people who want to call in and ask questions. We'll start in South Bristol with Joel. Hi, Joel, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. First of all, I'd like to commend Maine Public for putting this important issue on its schedule. Both Ann and David have mentioned that red flag laws exist in other states. How many states currently have a red flag law?
Ann.
21 states currently have a red flag law. And in each of those states, studies have shown that the number of firearm deaths, particularly those related to suicide, have decreased significantly. 21 states.
Can I answer
We're
that?
not an
Yes.
outlier.
Yeah. Actually, there's 22 states because Maine has an extreme risk protection order law. And those that promote red flag fail to tell you that. There is no such thing as yellow or red flag. There's an extreme risk protection order law. We have one. In other states, I'll give you an example. Massachusetts uses theirs about 8 to 10 times a year, and they sometimes fail. Colorado has 6 million people, 353 times in 3 years. Nevada 61 times last year. My point is that Maine's law is being used at a rate much higher than other states use red flag. That's just the truth. And it's so effective because it's conducted through a process and the police. And in other states, ironically, with red flag, they're moving to allowing the police to do the red flag orders because they're far more effective. Now, one last thing. Let's talk about suicide for a moment. Out of the 1,121 orders to date, three quarters of those are related to suicide situations. Our law is working, and it is working incredibly well.
Well,
Well, the
Anne, let
bottom
me
line
ask you
is.
that. Yeah, I mean, I do know and want to acknowledge that since the Lewiston shootings, the yellow flag law has been used a great deal more. Anne?
That's correct. Before Lewiston, It was only used 80 times between 2020 and 2023 when Lewiston occurred. Law enforcement is much more aware of the law and paying attention to it. But the bottom line is, usually around 85% of the gun deaths in this state are suicides by firearm. Suicides by firearm. We can prevent those deaths by having a second tool. And people keep saying, oh, it's going to get rid of the current law. It's not going to get rid of the current law. It's adding to the current law, and it's giving other options available. We need to do everything we can to prevent firearm suicides. Now, this current law, both the yellow flag and what's proposed under question two, includes dangerous weapons, which is more than just firearms. But let's be honest, it's about firearm deaths. That's what this is about. And they've been shown by national studies that states that have these options available have reduced suicide deaths. Maine's had a huge increase. It's been covered in the press and the number of suicides and suicides by firearms in Maine in the last 10 years. We can't just stand by and let this happen. It's not fair to the families. It's not fair to the children. It's not fair to the communities. And it's not fair to law enforcement, who is constantly having to deal with mental health and people who are in crisis.
I want to ask an important question here, and you mentioned this here, this is an email from Janice. She writes, "There's been a lot of talk of mental health screening. Where do mental health experts stand on this? Have they endorsed the ballot measure proposed in question two?" And
They
you're
have.
saying yes, they have.
Yes, they have. Yes,
And
they
David, I
have.
see you shaking your head. People in the mental health community, people in the disability rights community, are very frustrated by the linkage of mental health with violence, because they say most people with mental health issues are not violent, and people who are all violent do not all have mental health issues. And David, I want you to respond to Janice's question. Why is a mental health screening necessary given that?
Well, a lot of times individuals who are suffering a mental health crisis is on a waiting list. They don't get any help. They don't have access to mental health workers in their communities. After the Lewiston shooting, I was summoned by the Speaker of the House, Rachel Talbot Ross, and the governor to talk about expanding mental health services across our state. That legislation, sponsored by Rachel Talbot Ross, expanded receiving centers and behavioral health centers across rural Maine, where mental health services are desperately needed. You'll have your chance in a second, Anne, please. That legislation passed. Well, in the last budget, five of those behavioral health centers and two of the receiving centers were cut from the budget. We tried to bring forward those restorations, because in Maine, it's crucial that, because we're so big, that people, when in crisis, have access to care. We may not even need red or yellow flag if people were getting the care that they needed. And it was, unfortunately, members of the Judiciary Committee who helped us originally pass that, who would not let that legislation come forward. And then 2 weeks later, they announced $152 million surplus. So we've got work to do. Those restorations must be made. And I'm asking you, Anne, if, when this is all done, maybe we could put our forces together and get mental health services delivered to all parts of the state.
Mental health services are desperately needed. The bottom line is, after Lewiston, they established legislation to set up receiving centers, to set them up. There's already one in Portland, to set them up in Lewiston, Augusta, Bangor, and Aroostook County. The Bangor one, nothing has happened. The monies for Aroostook and Kennebec County were cut out of the budget, despite the fact that we've got over $1 billion in the rainy day fund, and there was a $152 million surplus. The bottom line is, in Lewiston, the families, the survivors who tried to get mental health services were on waiting lists, or they were driving an hour and a half south to York and to Kittery and their insurance companies were limiting the number of sessions. One poor surviving family testified that there were six people in the immediate family who needed mental health services because their loved one was gunned down. They were allowed two sessions each.
It's wrong.
That's inexcusable.
We need
to work to get better mental health services, and we need to work to get training programs and college programs and things in the pipeline to be able to provide the services that are needed. But it is true, the Maine Medical Association, the Maine Association of Psychiatric Providers, and other mental health providers here in Maine support question two.
Okay, I'm going to try to pick up the pace here because we have so many calls coming in. We're going to go to Bob from Saco. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, well, thank you for taking my call. I'd like to ask your speakers to correct me if I'm wrong, but I very much think this is putting the cart before the horse, because without a universal background check, if you were to be successful in using a yellow flag or a red flag to take away guns from somebody, without a universal background check, is there anything keeping that person from buying another gun in a private sale where there are no background checks and there are no red flags or yellow flags? Because it seems to me these red flag and yellow flags are a bit of an empty shell or a skeleton without a universal background check.
Yeah, Bob, good question. David, right now, if someone has had their guns taken away, can they turn around and buy them from somebody
else?
The legislature
actually addressed it and made the universe where you can buy a gun to a private sale much smaller. They expanded background checks to all advertised sales. So no longer can you go to Uncle Henry's and buy a gun without a background check. You can't go and advertise the sale of a firearm.
But if it's unadvertised, you could.
That's right.
Yeah, but then
it's unadvertised, you can.
Yeah, in those circumstances, it's already a felony to sell a firearm to a prohibited individual. So I think there's some education work that could be done there. But I don't know how you can stop Uncle Joe from transferring a firearm to his nephew or a family member. And that's really, I think, the place where that's happening. If you go to a gun show now, most every gun show out there is requiring background checks. And so there may be a possibility where that can happen, but that's true. That's true all around the nation. Can you always 100% of the time guarantee that a person won't have access to a gun? No, but that universe is a lot smaller.
But the bottom line is efforts were made to make it apply to all gun sales, and the legislature didn't go for that.
Okay.
They said if it's an advertised sale.
We'll go to Jeremy, who's calling from Cherry Township in Aroostook County. Hi, Jeremy. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you doing? I am got some concerns on the red flag law because the proponents seem to keep linking it with Lewiston, but we already have a law that could have prevented Lewiston, and it was a breakdown at governmental level that stopped the yellow flag from working. And the best minds, both, I'm an independent, I'm seeing the best people from the Republicans and the Democrats, everybody from Governor Mills to people to Billy Bob Falkingham, all coming together saying we don't need this red law, it's bad. So to me as an independent, if I see both extremes coming together and saying we don't need this red flag law, then we need to let the legislature handle it and not throw this mashed together thing out there to the public. That's just my opinion.
Sure, Jeremy, I think you're making the same point David made earlier in the show, so I'll have Ann respond to that.
Well, the point of the matter is Maine tried with the yellow flag law to make its own path, to build its own system, and it failed. People went to the legislature and wanted changes made, and they chose not to. Maine is unique among many states by allowing citizens referendums when the citizens say, you know what, folks, you're not doing your job. This is what we want. The proposal for question two was very carefully crafted following the Constitution, and there are thousands of people out there in the state who support this. What doesn't make sense is people saying, well, we have a system in place. That system has failed. That system could fail again, but we don't want to do anything else to try to plug those holes and to make corrections. I recently got a call from a retired chief of police, retired state trooper, who said, thank you for speaking up, because what question two does proposes a rational, reasonable addition to our law.
Jennifer, can I jump in here? Because I have to correct. Ann, you continue to say that Maine's yellow law failed. You were on the commission who said Maine's yellow flag law did not fail. It wasn't used, and it could have been used.
And it failed because they died.
No.
People died, David.
No.
We can't forget that.
That is not fair, Ann. The law was never used. So how could the law fail? The red flag law was never used. How could it fail? It was people that failed. The Department of Defense just did a study or an investigation of the Army's role in this. And rightly, the families are suing the Army. They found 8 different times in which the Army failed to stop Robert Card. So if you want to make this about the Lewiston shooting, let's make it about a system change and find all the places where the system failed. But no, you have focused because politically your organization you're representing has been behind red flag for a long, long time. And after the Lewiston shooting, the emotions of that shooting, I believe that's when people give up their rights the easiest, is when there's a tragedy. They're giving up their rights under red flag to, you know, keep this in mind, your listeners. People who get yellow flagged in Maine are your relatives, your friends, your uncles, your aunts, your brothers and sisters. When the state police and public safety say, and I trust them, that this will make it more dangerous, you're putting your family members potentially in the future in a more dangerous situation. Now, you may disagree with that, and that's fine, but that is what the professionals are saying. And your caller just asked, I think, the best question that can be asked. On such a complicated issue where lawyers and the courts are involved, a complex issue, you're asking Maine people to vote on something that could cost lives and make it more dangerous. Now, that's just the reality. That's not my words. That's the reality.
That's not the reality. That's not the reality. You're trying to make it out that by imposing or adding the conditions in question two, that we're eliminating the yellow flag. That's not what is happening.
No, I agree with that.
Now, let's be clear here. My position on this is based on the fact that we saw that systems and people failed, and the proposal under question two will fix that system and allow other options. And it makes no sense to say we only want the yellow flag law. We don't want to have any other way for people to get the help they need and to get the orders put in place.
We do need to take another quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're hearing the arguments for and against Maine ballot question two. It proposes what is regarded as a red flag law. With me, David Trahan, no on question two. And Ann Jordan, yes, on question two. David Trahan is executive director of the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine. Ann Jordan is former public safety commissioner for the state of Maine. Share your comments and questions. We'll try to get to as many as possible. Our email, talk@mainepublic.org. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go up to Rockland and Mimi. Hi, Mimi. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. I am a family member of a severely mentally ill person. I have been in several situations where I've had to call law enforcement and crisis, and law enforcement didn't always come. I believe that families are the best avenue, along with law enforcement, to be able to get resolution for people that are so severely mentally ill that they're dangerous to themselves and others. Law enforcement aren't mental health professionals. They don't always know what to look for when they go and do a welfare check with a mental health assessment. Family members, believe me, are vigilant and they are educated. and they know what to do. So to take that away from them, that one avenue that they may have to save lives, I think is a detriment to community, to the families themselves. And, you know, it's something that's needed.
So Mimi, just to be clear, you are in support of question two.
I am absolutely in support of question two. I think it's vital.
Yeah. David, what would you say to Mimi?
Yeah. Well, first of all, the mental health provision that's in Maine's current law, the way that that is exercised is when the police officer, and the police officer doesn't diagnose a mental illness. He just uses probable cause, which is a pretty low standard, to basically say that there's something going on. When the person is then evaluated, that's when the court can intervene on behalf of the family, like your family, where that person's in protective custody, they've been evaluated, something is going on. Under our law that exists today, by statute, they must be connected to help. And that's the compassionate intervention that's so important in our law. What we need is we need more readily available mental health services when a person's been identified. In addition, there was a delay in Maine's yellow flag law. It was not because it was cumbersome. I'll tell you why. It was because the telemedicine component, or the mental health component, was delayed in its implementation. And once it came online, those mental health evaluations accelerated, and so did the yellow flags. But more importantly, if you want your loved one to be cared for by mental health workers, Maine's existing yellow flag law is the avenue.
All right, Anne.
Mimi, I'm sorry that your family is experiencing this, but you are a perfect example of why sometimes families know best. If you have someone who's been in the situation like yours, families know best. The problem was, prior to COVID, after the yellow flag law was put into place, the major hospitals associations here in Maine wouldn't do the evaluations.
Right.
And once COVID happened and telehealth was set up, there was more availability, but it's still not perfect. And the bottom line is, it makes no sense to say, we're not going to allow the families to intervene. We're not going to allow the families to go to court.
All right.
Families know their loved ones, and families have often said, after tragic situations, we saw this coming. We didn't know it was going to be.
We have Jackie calling in from Portland. I believe it's Jacqueline Sartoris, the district attorney in Cumberland County. Is that who you are, Jackie?
That's correct. Thank you.
Go ahead.
And good morning. I want to thank you so much for hosting this today. It's such an important issue. So I strongly support moving us, based on our experience here in Cumberland County, to the red flag law. The yellow flag law is both very cumbersome. It also, frankly, given the burden of proof that there is now, means that family members who know what's happening with someone have to provide a level of evidence, which I think is just not warranted. If we mimic the PFA situation, the protection from abuse or harassment situation, it'll be much safer. It'll allow families to act. My other question, though, and my concern is this. Right now, yellow flag really only applies to folks where there is a mental health evaluation. I think David just alluded to that when he said, well, the holdup was setting up the folks who were going to do the mental health evaluation. As I understand it, red flag, and please correct me if I'm wrong, would apply to people who are thought to be becoming potentially dangerous, potentially even homicidal, but don't have a diagnosable mental health issue. For example, a domestic violence situation where someone is repeatedly threatening, where they have access to firearms or other dangerous weapons, yellow flag wouldn't apply to that right now. So my question is, does red flag apply to situations which are not simply about mental health? And then second, again, we strongly support, we've probably done the vast, I would say almost majority of the yellow flag cases at this point. My staff and I, my attorneys and I, and those are the people doing the hearings, we would say that the red flag law makes more sense and will be more protective. So thank you for taking my question.
Jackie, thank you. And Anne, I'm going to have you answer that question about the mental health and also go to David as well. So under the new law, would someone have to have a provable diagnosis, or is the standard different?
The standard does not, under the proposed addition to the law, if you go under question two, there is not a requirement for a mental health evaluation. The court can order mental health treatment as part of their order after the full hearing. And the bottom line is the DA is correct. This is cumbersome, it's difficult, and it's going to give families another option. If you have somebody who's already in treatment, like Mimi's family member is, why are you forcing another evaluation before a judge can have a say what's there?
And David, I want to ask you about Jackie's point that if somebody is angry and violent but doesn't have a diagnosable mental health condition, under the current law, can that person's firearms be taken away?
Yes, there is not a required diagnosis for a mental illness to have your firearm rights taken away. As a former prosecutor, Ms. Jordan should know that due process is cumbersome. You can't just say somebody's a witch and then that person has to prove that they're not a witch, because that's what happens under red flag. A person goes into the court, signs an affidavit saying that Mr. Smith is dangerous. They use an extremely low due process standard to do that. So now you're labeled dangerous. For the rest of your life, you're trying to get your rights back, and they use a much higher due process standard.
That's not correct.
The mental health component.
That is not correct, because under the current law, you have to submit an affidavit with facts and evidence that supports it. If you put in false information, it's a felony. Two, under the current law, the taking away of the guns is for 1 year. Maximum of 1 year with a right to apply to have it extended. After that, the law mandates that that order be taken out of the federal system that prohibits people from buying guns. So don't make it out like you lose your guns for life, because that's simply false.
Okay, let me jump. You interrupted me. Can I just finish my answer? You interrupted me, and I didn't interrupt you after you asked me to respect you. All right, so I read the law that you're proposing. The preponderance of evidence standard is the same one when the individual comes back to the court to have their rights restored. You use the same clear and convincing evidence that the judge has to measure against that person's restoration of rights. So you red flag them, and I call it scarlet letter them, under a very low due process standard. And then when they try to get their rights back, you make it very difficult through a much higher criminal standard. That's in the law, Anne.
That's incorrect, because the way it works is you have the initial application, then there's a full hearing, and the court makes the finding. Then if you want to get your guns back before the expiration of the one year, then the person who wants to get their gun rights back have the right to petition the court once during the course of that year and to show that they are no longer a danger to themselves or others.
I'm going to thank Jackie and try to squeeze in one more question. Jamie, if you can ask your question very quickly, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a quick one. So, listening to this all, does a person have to go through the yellow flag first? And go through the process.
No.
We agree on something, David.
No. Well, we probably would agree on more.
You go, Jamie. There's your answer. And then somebody else wants to ask. Okay, Vinny, go really, really quickly. What's your question?
Yes, if someone has to give up their weapons and they live in a household where other people have firearms, so those people also have to give up their rights for having the firearms?
No, they have to be secured properly. And that's where intervention by the police is so important. When they go to a home with multiple individuals in the home, they would have to work with them to secure those firearms.
All right, great. Well, Vinny, thank you for the question, and thank you for being quick with the question. And thank you, both of you, for joining us today. The voice you just heard, David Trahan, the executive director of the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine, and Ann Jordan, an attorney and former commissioner of public safety for Maine. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we're talking history, the fire of 1775 that burned down Portland 250 years ago. And be sure to catch analysis of this question two, in the latest episode of Maine's Political Pulse with Steve Missler. That will be tomorrow afternoon on All Things Considered. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.